The Rodcast.
If you want more information, go to rodders.com and click on Rodders FM.
It's been a chaotic week or so. So, without further ado, or any more monkeying around, there's a hole in my bucket, lies, and I demand you fix it. Let's get on with the show!
Warning, warning, this show is complete bollocks and is not fit for human consumption. If you or anyone you know are suffering severe mental episodes due to the content of this show, call the Rodders FM Psychiatric Helpline on 0844-8844-831.
Hello.
Or you can Skype us using the Skype name Rodders FM with no spaces. And remember, if you call in, mute your radio.
You have been warned.
Your week's been now. You've taken crap from everyone you know. But Friday come like morning sun. It's Rodders. Brand new show. It's got Z-list guests, crazy competitions, Mystic Mug, and Beelzebub.
This song is diabolical.
Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday. Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday. Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday.
Yes, that's right. Welcome one and all to Rodders FM. Hello to Morgan. Hello to Woogie. Hello to three people loitering outside the chat room. Just put your name in. It's not hard. Hello to Katie if she's listening. Hello to Leanna. Hello to everybody on this fine, windy evening. The show has actually started now. That's a bit of a miracle. On tonight's show, we have an absolutely jam-packed show tonight. We have Bobby's Amazing Facts. We have some interesting phone-in topics. And we have lots and lots of nutty stuff coming up on the show. And also the main event tonight, I booked in an interview with Rob Gauntlet. He is an adventurer. Let me read some stuff to you about him. I was privileged enough to go see a talk he gave. He is an adventurer. And at just 19, he climbed Everest. I mean, that's only a year older than me. That's ridiculously motivated. And in 2007, he set off to travel pole to pole, only using human and natural power. That's a distance of 26,000 miles. 26,000 miles. That's ridiculous. He should be coming on the show tonight, but our phone-in topics tonight are... Number one, who would you most like to have a herbal bath with? That is the question tonight. Who would you most like to have a herbal bath with? I would probably choose, I don't know, a philosopher, probably Plato. I don't know. I think that'd be quite an interesting bath partner. Although, I don't know. Actually, I don't know if that'd be a good idea, because philosophers don't tend to wash. They're too busy thinking. That's why I'll never be a good philosopher, because I'm far too hygienic. I wash at least once a month. But, you know, I'm going to it's been a stupid week. And there's something I want to have a moan about tonight, guys. Fridges, right? They're normally a convenience, aren't they? They're a convenience product. But lately, to me, they've been an inconvenience. In our sixth form study centre, in our locker area, there is, for some reason, a fridge. And it's meant to fit in the tiny, tiny cupboard, which is the kitchen area, so we can keep some milk in there to make tea, to make us do more work. At least I bet they sort of put bromine in the tea as well, to make us work harder and not get distracted with naughty thoughts. But, anyway, the fridge, right, it's always in the way. One day it's in front of the door, so you open the door and you walk smack into a fridge. That's not funny. And sometimes it's in front of people's lockers. My mate Hugo was so sick of it, he started using the fridge as his locker until he realised how disgusting it was making his bag smell. So, what I want to do, next time he puts his laptop in there, I'm going to turn the fridge on and then laugh as he has to defrost his laptop. That'll be brilliant. And lately, the fridge has been getting ideas above its station. I found it in the toilet. I mean, somebody's going to do something horrible to that fridge sooner or later. But we're going to start off with some unsigned music now. Here is Avalon Way with See Me Down. This is going to be a cracking show. I want you to call in on who would you most like to have a herbal bath with. And also, recently, we did a team building trip on my sixth form, where the idea was, oh no, let's put the new sixth formers and the old sixth formers together in life-threatening situations up ridiculously high ladders, so that they'll bond. What actually happened, we all just fought like animals for survival, and we've now got the smallest sixth form on record, because a lot of people didn't make it back from the trip. I mean, it's crazy. And if you're not in the chat room, just type your name in that chat room. It's not hard, even I can do it. Here is a song by an unsigned band called Avalon Way. Actually, no, they're not unsigned. A record company sent it to me. So I don't know what I'm going on about tonight. Avalon Way, their song is called See Me Down. I like cheese toasties, I eat them with marmalade, yes. Though you don't like them, I'll carry on doing it tonight. I should be a lyricist. I think what we're going to be doing, we're going to be talking about something that is incredibly annoying later on the show. Rick Rowling, if you know what that is, give me a call. And also, who would you most like to have a herbal bath with? You don't know how sick you make me.
Now's the part of the show where Rod is all going to rant about what really makes him sick.
You make me f***ing sick to my stomach.
You know what really makes me sick? No, really, I want to know. Other than overdosing on paracetamol, that will mess up your liver. Don't do that, whatever you do. But guys, what's making me sick recently is... You know, I'm not tackling a big political issue tonight. I'm talking about my local cinema, the View Cinema in Reading. It's so tatty, and it's like £8 or so to see a film. I mean, you know, I wouldn't mind paying £8 for a brilliant film, but most films out now are absolute rubbish. For example, Step Brothers. Don't go and see that. There's only so long you find two grown men acting like retards. In the true sense of the word, amusing. I mean, it grows boring very quickly, and I'm not prepared to waste my money on it. And, you know, this cinema, if it was a nice cinema, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But it's not. It's really tatty. The seats are falling to bits. There's popcorn everywhere. I mean, they've given up tidying the place. And you go into the toilets, and they go, and there's a big sign up saying, "Sorry, the toilet seats have been removed for your safety." What? That's crazy. What's dangerous about a toilet? Perhaps people were ranting and raving and hitting each other with a toilet seat. Well, perhaps if they screened more entertaining films, there wouldn't be domestic violence in the toilet. It's horrendous. I mean, boredom drives people to the most extreme actions. I mean, when I went to see Step Brothers, and indeed The Emperor's New Groove when that came out, I did feel like smashing someone over the head with a toilet. I mean, that's the first thing that came out of my mind. I mean, you know, and then I thought of leaving the cinema, but firstly, I just wanted to hit someone with a toilet seat. And the tickets are really tatty. It's not even, you know, if you've seen a nice, you know, this is sad, but when I went to see the first Harry Potter film, I still got the ticket. Somewhere, you know, in the vague hope it will become a collector's item. But they're really tatty. And they don't even have a nice little line that you can rip. They literally just tear them to shreds. So if you go to the loo and you have to show your ticket again, you're literally pulling bits of confetti out your pocket. And it makes me sick. And what else really annoys me, while you're trying to watch the trailers, there's some Muppet sitting there with a wheelie stand with an umbrella above it. It's ridiculous. Selling sweets. I mean, why sell sweets right in the middle of the film? It's ridiculous. It's distracting, and it's not a football match. Goodness sake, makes me sick. Leanna writes in, "Oh, I paid £7.20 at my local cinema. It's ridiculous. Do you know what I did? You know, I felt like being rebellious and taking down the system. I'd probably been listening to too much Rage Against the Machine. I went to the cinema and I barefaced lied and said I was 14, even though I'm 18, and I got in as a child. It's ridiculous. Unfortunately, the bloke I was going to the cinema with happens to be a born-again Christian, and you know, and so he wouldn't do it. And what's more, I said, you know, why didn't you lie? I mean, they're taking too much money. This, you know, we should take down capitalism, etc. And he just goes, you know, I just don't like doing that sort of thing. And if I go to hell for lying about my age on a cinema ticket, then I'm blaming that particular friend who I'm not going to name. Woo in the chat room types in, "The View ain't that bad." The View is terrible. If you had to literally have a view which personified, or rather, was a simile or a metaphor for the View cinema, it would be a dump. It would look like a balcony view of Slough. And quite frankly, it makes me completely irate. Just got hold of the Explorer. He's coming on the show.
Rodders FM, more fun than a kick in the balls.
Thank Rod, it's Friday!
That's right, thank Rod, it's Friday. And we're just about to ring our special guest. His name is Rob Gauntlet. He is the youngest person ever to climb Mount Everest. He's an adventurer, and he has trekked from pole to pole using only natural power. So we're going to give him a ring now. I'm very excited. It's great to have you on the show. Thanks for agreeing to do this.
Not at all.
Now, you're the youngest person ever to climb Mount Everest. That's an amazing achievement. But what inspired you? Because it's not the sort of thing you can do. It takes a lot of planning. You can't just go out, get out of bed and go, oh, yeah, I'd think I'll climb Everest today.
Well, Funny enough, though, Rod, it is actually exactly what I did. Because when we, James Hooper, who's my climbing partner, and I, we've both been at school for quite a long time. We've been at school since 11. And it was around our GCSEs that we were reading through this article, and it was about Everest. And without having done any experience at all, we kind of thought, yeah, we can do this. And so we spent 3 years planning it, and that was it.
It's absolutely amazing, because people say, you hear of people climbing Everest. A lot of people have climbed Everest now, but it must be incredibly difficult. Were your parents happy about you doing this? Because my parents get worried if I'm go down the local shops and I'm a bit late and stuff. So were your parents happy about it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it took a lot of persuading. I think climbing Everest is pretty easy compared to persuading my parents that it was a good idea.
What did you do? Did you give an ultimatum? Either I get out, I go out, and I become an ASBO, or I climb Everest.
Well, it was kind of a bit like that, but really, I knew I had to get their support behind us, otherwise it wouldn't really work. So, I mean, getting we had some good friends who supported us and helped us raise some of the fundraising for it as well. So, jokes aside, we kind of had to have the support of everyone around us to do it, and we were just really the tip of the iceberg.
Even to have the confidence to say I'm going to do that must take a lot of support. Now, recently you've travelled 26,000 miles, and it took a year and 1 month to travel from pole to pole. What inspired you to do that? Because that's climbing Everest is one thing. I mean, this just takes it to a new level of craziness.
Well, the thing is when we got back from Everest, it was in 2006, and we'd only just turned 19, and because Everest had been such a focal point of our lives, we'd been training for this for such a long time. And when we finally reached this challenge or this goal, instead of feeling very elated and pleased that we've done it, we actually felt as though something had been missing in our lives. We no longer had something to work towards. So that's when we got a little bit depressed back at home, and we were kind of thinking of different ways we could put that challenge back in our lives. And then we came up with this idea of going from pole to pole. And when we discovered no one had actually ever done it before, we're kind of more and more involved and excited about this prospect, and it all got a bit out of hand, and 9 months later we actually started on this 15-month, 26,000-mile journey.
It's an incredible thing to do. So it was a bit of an anti-climax, suddenly reaching Everest.
Yeah, in a funny kind of way, it was exactly that, a bit of an anti-climax.
It's a bit like one of my friends, he's into, my mate Josh, into a lot of acting, and he's always so miserable the day after a play comes to an end, because he doesn't have anything...
It's funny, isn't it? I think anyone that kind of has that kind of ability to release themselves and enjoy that moment so much, and then when they're not doing that, it's almost, as you say, a low, and it doesn't matter whether you're climbing Everest or just on a play. It's the same thing. It must be the same psychological condition.
Yeah, just out of interest, why did you choose the magnetic poles rather than the geographic poles?
Well, that's a great question. We were intending to go from geographic pole to geographic pole. However, when we looked at the logistics of doing it using natural power, then we worked out it would take us about 2.5 years to do it. And so we tried to compromise to some extent, and then we came up with the magnetic to magnetic. And so that kind of simplified it, and it suddenly meant that due to the small logistical issues up north and down south, we could now sail to the South Magnetic Pole, and it meant we could dog sled and use Inuit hunters higher up north. So it's kind of a whole combination of reasons, but we had to be very, very quick going across the states and catching the weather windows, which we otherwise wouldn't be able to do if we'd done the other poles.
I've heard magnetic poles, they can switch, can't they? How gutted would you have been if the magnetic poles had switched over when you were just nearly at your at the end of the journey?
Yeah, that would have been quite funny. Apparently the poles are due to switch. They switch every like 10,000 years, or maybe even a little bit less.
James Hooper, that your partner with this, how's your relationship with him? Have you known him since you were a boy?
I'm still a kid though, really. So, James and I met at school. We started secondary school together, and we've known each other obviously for I'm 21 now, so I've known James for 10 years, but we've been probably best of friends for like 5 years.
On you were together on this trip for like over a year. Was there ever a point where you bickered or quarrelled, or did you manage to pull together on the whole?
Well, interestingly enough, we actually got on a lot better on the expeditions that we do than when we're at home, because you know we're sharing that common goal together and we're both working so hard towards it and know that we need each other to be able to do it. And so when we get back home, it's kind of, that's when we start getting fisticuffs over like basic silly things, really.
Was there ever a point where, because you know you must have been so enthusiastic going out there, but was there ever a point when the reality of the mammoth task hit you and you thought, oh, I'm really not sure about this?
I think that probably sunk in the most at the start, because we just got dog sled, spent 2 weeks on a dog sled trying to get to the start line, and when we were left there on the ice completely alone, you know, we had 26,000 miles in 15 months ahead of us, and we were just like, what have we got ourselves in for? You know, it's kind of that feeling where you genuinely think you've bitten off more than you can chew, and starting to regret slightly your ambitions, which are all very well when you're warm and cosy inside your home or office back in the UK, but very different when you're actually there.
Yeah, but it must have been such a logistical challenge. I remember when you were giving the talk about it, you said preparing for it and getting the sponsorship was almost harder than the actual expedition itself. But you got Adidas to sponsor you, which can always be a good thing.
Yeah, no, we've had a lot of support from different companies and different people, and you know, it's pretty exciting to have the challenge of getting sponsorship. But it's very difficult, as you say, and I think quite possibly more difficult than the challenge itself was to keep up with the administration and raising the massive amount of funds needed to take on a trip like this.
When you've got all these people behind you at home, but they're thousands of miles away, were there any silly little things you do? Like, I was watching a video of you on the ITV News, and you seemed to be playing music. You were listening to Eye of the Tiger. Was there silly stuff like that you did to try and keep yourself motivated?
Yeah, no, there was. And we actually afforded ourselves like one or two very, very lucky luxuries which would keep us sane, and one of those was an iPod, and James's was an iPod and mine were these tiny little speakers, and so we could charge them up with a solar panel and listen to music.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was cool. We had some great technology, and on our website 180degrees.com you can kind of check out different videos, which every day we uploaded videos.
Pretty astonishing. Next time you go, take an iPod and put my podcast on there.
I will.
What were you most worried about? Because it must have been, what was the most difficult? Because you went through desert in America, you went through the Arctic wastelands. What was the most scary place you had to go?
I think probably the most mentally tiring place was probably the Arctic, because you're sledding for often between 12 and 18 hours each day, and there's nothing on the horizon. You've just got the same bleak landscape, and there's not really any telling that you've actually made any distance other than a digit on the GPS. And so it's very difficult, excuse me, to maintain that focus and that morale, you know, when things just never seem to change.
I understand there was a terrible incident where you dropped a glove off your sledge, and in the process of trying to rescue it, you actually fell through the ice.
Well, that was arguably the worst part of the whole expedition. You're right, when I dropped my glove, I went back to go and pick it up when we were on the dog sled. I fell through the ice and I hit my head and knocked myself out on the way in. So, I was unconscious with face down in the water, and James managed to pull me out, get me breathing again, and ordered a helicopter to come rescue us off the ice. But it was a pretty horrendous ordeal, and James did tremendously well to actually try and resolve it.
Oh, that's incredible. That stuff, you know, I've only seen this sort of thing happen in films. So you can't, how long can you actually last in that? Because the water must have been ridiculously cold, seeing as it was in the ice.
Yeah, well, the thing is, because of the salt content in the water, the temperature was about -2 degrees centigrade. It's not really absolutely sure why I went unconscious instantly, but it's probably a combination between hitting my head onto my ice, as well as the shock of the cold, which also Which also, what can happen is because it's so cold, your heart can actually stop instantly and cause a heart attack because of the cold. But yeah, luckily I was in pretty good shape when it happened, and yeah, I'm still alive and talking to Rodders FM right now, so yeah. It can't have been that bad.
So once, didn't James haul you out of the ice?
Yeah, he did. He did. He kind of dissipated his weight by spreading out on the ice, and managed to haul me out, which is quite an achievement, really.
That's amazing. Then what did you have to do? Do you have to get an air ambulance or something?
Yeah, well, he got me in a sleeping bag, and then he got onto the sat phone and started to call around some of the contacts we had in Greenland. Managed to get hold of the American airbase up in Greenland, and they were able to rescue us off the ice and took us to a small Inuit hospital. So.
That's amazing.
Thank God, huh?
Thank God. You must have been prepared for this sort of thing, though. I mean, obviously you wouldn't want it to happen, but were you fairly well prepared for all these terrible events that could happen?
Well, yeah, we knew it was a possibility, and so we went on a training course about, you know, how to prepare ourselves for the ice and for the Arctic and any eventuality that might take place. But when it really happens, you can never really prepare for the feeling of when things actually start to unravel for the worst like that.
Yeah, it's horrendously scary, I'd imagine. Now, speaking of the freezing cold condition, a listener called Jamie from London has just sent in a question. It sounds ridiculous, but I promise you he's trying to be serious. You hear of people hiking naked around the UK. If you climbed Everest, he asks, is it possible to climb Everest in nothing but a pair of Speedos, or would you definitely die, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think that's a great idea to try and guide Everest in a pair of Speedos. But I mean, literally because of the cold, you wouldn't get very far. But interestingly enough, Everest gets quite warm during the day because you're so high, and the sun's rays are actually quite intense. But when it came to evening, you definitely want to put on some kind of down jacket and cover up those bare nipples.
It's a ridiculous question, Jamie. Don't do it. Whatever you do, don't. I will not be held responsible for any of your silly antics. Yeah, you'd need a pair of boots, especially. And the thing that I would be most scared about, like I've been skiing and stuff up in Austria, and the thing I always worried about in a bit of a pathetic, paranoid way is frostbite. I mean, there was no way I was going to get it because I was only skiing for an afternoon at a time or a morning and an afternoon. What did you do? Because frostbite must have been a real issue for you.
Yeah, well, frostbite is a pretty horrendous thing, and there's not really any telling when it's going to come on. But yeah, obviously trying to keep yourself warm. If your hands are getting cold, you put them in your armpits. But also on Everest, we took Viagra, which seemed like a bit of a strange choice of drug to take. But actually, the research recently showed that it stimulates, it's a vasodilator, so it dilates all those capillaries in your fingers, usually your penis, obviously, but for us, it had a particular application in our fingers and toes, and played a role, I think, in preventing us from getting frostbite.
So, thanks. That would look hilarious on a Viagra advert. Thanks to Viagra, I was able to climb Everest so I can navigate the globe.
I think there's definitely some scope there. Perhaps you can link me up with someone.
What makes you think I've got connections with Viagra? I'm not that sort of person. What have you got planned next? Have you got any more expeditions planned?
Well, at the moment, James and I are writing a book, and we're trying to get all the footage that we took into a documentary. But, you know, in the longer term, there definitely will be some other expeditions. We've got a few ideas up our sleeve, but, yeah, we're trying to work on paying off our debts from 180 degrees before we can press on with other adventures and antics.
Because a lot of it, you managed to raise a lot of funds for climate awareness, didn't you?
Yeah, that was key to us. You know, we wanted to really, our two messages were to kind of raise awareness about climate change and kind of report back our observations, but also to kind of encourage young people that you can really achieve so much more than you think you can.
Yeah, thank you. You know, honestly, you are a total inspiration. And check out his website, robgauntlet.com, and thanks for talking to me tonight and taking time out of your hectic schedule.
All right, cheers, Rod.
Thanks,
care,
then.
Mate.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Oh, what a fantastic interview. That was Rob Gauntlet there. Thanks to Jamie for that horrendously ridiculous question. You know, the other question I really, really wanted to ask him, was when he was at the North Pole, did he ever meet Father Christmas?
Rodders FM. It's much better than a Yorkshire pudding.
That was the amazing Rob Gauntlet. And the coolest thing about him, right, is he's got most people who try and have motivational messages, right? They don't sound quite genuine. They normally say something like, anything is possible if you believe in yourself. But his message is, you know, not, oh, you should all go out and climb Everest. His message seems to be that we each have to find our own Everest, our own goal, and if you break ultimate goal into achievable, that is a made word, achievable steps, then you can do anything. Though that's actually true. I don't like people who falsely try and motivate, but he is a true inspiration. He's a wicked guest. I really hope I can get him on the show again to talk about his adventures, hopefully when we'd have more time to do a longer interview. You've got an audio treat ahead of you now, because we're going to have Bobby's Amazing Fact.
Rodders FM.
Just hope he answers the phone.
Justice. Democracy. And blowing the crap out of the Iraq.
God bless America.
Hello.
Hello, Bobby. You're on the show. Woohoo.
All right. Now. All right. Cool.
Yeah. But firstly, Bobby, we've had a pretty exciting week. Co-host. Have you, says Bobby. Yeah, Bobby's been with me most of the week. He knows how boring it's been. But we did something quite good this week. Listeners out there, if you've heard co-host Ned, you'll know what Banana Bonce he is. And he's got a job, hasn't he, Bobby?
Oh, yes, but lifeguard. Oh,
he is a lifeguard. And this is, you must have heard, heard him talk about this on Back Chat, the show that chats back. Oh! He's now, you talked about his job as a lifeguard. And he's always kept me and Ned used to go to the swimming pool together and really wind up the lifeguard. He used to walk around and run around the pool like a teddy bear. One step, two step, get thrown out the pool by the lifeguard. And so it's kind of ironic that Ned's now a lifeguard and he's kept his shift secret from me and you, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, he has so far, but fortunately, if Ned's listening, we'll be out there to pester him on every time he's got a shift on.
So if you live near our school, come to the swimming pool on Tuesday night.
Yay!
Or was it Monday night? I can't remember.
I think he's got really bad karma, you know, what goes around comes around. He pestered the lifeguard, so we sort of do it 10 times as worse.
It was absolutely hilarious, because what we did, he's got a cash register, right? For those of you in America, because we have American listeners, believe it or not. What happened was, we annoyed him with a till, but I kept on pressing the till button. And the receipt kept popping out. And Ned is so immature. He's playing with a Batman toy, and it has a pen in it. Do you remember this, Bobby? And he has the most gay telephone voice. The phone rings, he goes, hello, the swimming pool! And then it was somebody phoning up to book the swimming pool, right?
I began to walk around the pool repeatedly.
To see how long it take Ned to kick you out. And the funniest thing was, Ned was then wrestling with Batman to get the pen out of Batman's hand, which he jammed in there like a snotty little toddler, and he couldn't get it out to write down the pool booking. It was so funny watching him flounder. And we were singing songs, we had a water fight, and if you're listening, fire Ned, he got the hose out and squirted me.
Yeah, and he pushed me in and he hit me.
You know what that sound indicates? Landing in his Bobby-mobile from the planet Bobby, it's Bobby with yet another of one of his...
Amazing facts! Have you ever wondered how many millimeters are in a millipede? Or how many mobile phones it would take to fry your buns? Or how many pancakes were involved in the 1996 event to break the world pancake record? Well, no, you probably haven't. This is the place where you find all the amazingest facts with Bobby!
Hello, fact fans out there, whoever you are, whatever you're doing. My fact tonight is that there is a correlation between occurrences of neurobiological disorders and which month you're born in.
What?
Okay. All right, Basically, it's the fact that, say you are born in the period of May to July, you have a higher than average probability of having dyslexia. And
I was born in June.
You're born in June?
Yes.
And you're dyslexic?
And I'm dyslexic. So that shows your theory there is a load of rubbish.
I just said it would.
Oh, no, that just proves I'm dyslexic.
Yeah.
And some nut with an unpronounceable name in the chat room goes Gemini question mark. Yep, congratulations. I am a Gemini. Maybe you can be our new fortune teller.
Okay. Actually, give your month. That'd be more accurate. I'll give your month, and I'll.
Oh no! I wasn't asking you.
I'll feed you back with what neurobiological disorders
Bobby.
You're likely to have or develop.
Oh God, he's still talking, Bobby. Look, I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to the listeners because somebody is telling me that I'm a Gemini. It's all getting very confusing.
Oh right, okay, cool.
Carry on with this fact then.
All right, basically, they found that, say, you were born in, say, May to June or. No, May to July, sorry, you have a good chance of developing dyslexia. September to December, you may develop panic disorder, it's likely. And February to April, good chance of schizophrenia due to the time in which you were just stating. They believe there's a link between low vitamin D due to you being growing while your mother is pregnant, but not receiving much.
What's your favourite neurological condition?
My favourite neurological...
Oh dear, I think we just lost him.
Hi, Ted Small here. Just telling you that if you were to stick your head in a bucket of pure distilled Rodders FM, it would probably sound a little bit like this.
Something that's been annoying me lately is this thing called Rick Rolling. Really nerdy, pathetic internet prank. And what happens is when you send someone a link and trick them into clicking on it, and this happens. This really cheesy song comes up. Normally the music video comes with it, and it's created so that you can't close it, and the window just jumps around your computer screen, and it's so infuriating. A listener by the name of Dan phoned me on Skype repeatedly until eventually I picked up and he Rick-rolled me. I was not impressed at all. Obama, I should get Obama rolled, and it's ridiculous. I think I'm going to try and Rick-roll someone. And also, can I just draw your attention to something you all need to do for the show? Go to vote.rodders.com, www.vote.rodders.com. That is, and all you do there, then you just enter your email address, and it sends you an email. Now, I've got my victim all set up. You give him a Rick Rolling that he'll never forget.
Hello?
Danny, you've been Rick-rolled.
Oh, that thing.
You've just been totally Rick-rolled. I'm feeling so proud of myself. How are you doing, Danny?
Oh, I'm cool,
Kim. Oh, I mean, how does it feel being Rick-rolled?
It feels the same.
The same as what? The rest of your life?
Yeah.
Thank God it's Friday. It's the day after Thursday.
That doesn't sound like Jamie.
It is Jamie.
My God, this is ridiculous. Your voice has completely changed. Are you synthesizing your voice to fool me into thinking that your voice has broken since you last called Rodders FM?
No,
I'm not really. My name's Jamie. Can you say hello, hello, hello?
Hello, hello, hello.
That's unreal. Anyway, Jamie, the topic is how can I annoy co-host Ned when he's being a lifeguard? Now, the listener by the name of Jamie is going to tell us how we can ruin Ned's life. Cut to it, Jamie.
Ned is sitting in a lifeguard chair, okay?
Yeah.
We randomly walk up to him with a bucket of water. We throw the water over him, push him off the chair, and say he's drowning. We then jump on him and try to save his life, but at the same time, we chuck him in the pool.
One small problem.
What's that?
We don't have one of those ridiculously high lifeguard chairs.
Go to forum.rodders.com and join up to the forum. Interact with Rodders during the week. And the more rubbish you post, the more rubbish gets on the show. Oh. Oh, yeah. And now live from
Rodders FM.
Radio Reading.
Is it a small miniature plastic trumpet?
No.
Is it a pencil?
No.
Is it a stapler?
No.
Is it a Hospital Radio Reading mug?
No.
It's Guess the Object.
Guess the Object. Guess the Object.
The part of the show where you guess the object.
Is it a spoon? No.
Right, Guess the Object, the crappest game on the radio. Let's just face it, it doesn't even work on the radio unless you're viewing the webcam. But, you know, guys, Jamie, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Andrew, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Let's have a hurrah for fresh air. Hurrah for fresh air.
Hurrah for
hurrah!
Fresh
air.
Guess that object. Come on, because I want to go to bed.
A can of Coke.
There's no Coke in the room. You're not even looking at the webcam, I bet. I'll give you a clue. Andrew, can you see the webcam?
I can see the webcam, yes.
It's near the... I don't even know if you can see it on the webcam, actually. It's... No, you can't. And that's crap. Actually, I've been looking at it all show.
You've been looking at it all show. Computer screen.
Yes, congratulations. Commiserations there, Jamie.
It's all right. See you later. Thank
bye,
you
guys.
For
cheers,
me.
Danny. I mean, Andrew and Jamie. Bye.
See you later. Bye.
That was hilarious. Right, it's actually the end of the show. Rodders here, signing out for Rodders FM.
Do a roadcast and a show. And then I really have to go. You've been the only thing that's right on the radio. Rodders, Rodders, you've been my